I want to open up the show today with a series of questions to you.
Great. I'm not nervous about this at all.
Are you in favor of open borders?
No.
Some would say you are in favor of open borders. Do you like for people to come in, but you just don't let people out?
I said no.
I think it seems like that you have an open borders policy.
Okay.
I mean, at least that's what you have typically at your house. You have an open border policy.
Actually, I don't. What we have, let me push back on this. We have a strict closed borders policy at my house. What we have is a failure of execution. With the executive branch, we've got the legislative branch.
They're unlocked.
They're pretty clear in what are the policies. The policies are well known and established, written in stone, you might even say. The executive branch at Fecundity Farm, Niles Ranch and Fecundity Farm, they have less clarity. There is a lot less clarity.
Is it clarity or is it just lack of execution?
It's unclear.
Is it just not being fit for the job?
It's unclear, which is why there's so little clarity, because things are so unclear. What we have is unclarity. We have a plethora of murkiness.
Hmm.
It's a Mirkwood situation.
Would some say that the one who is running Fecundity Farms is too old? He can't even put together his sentences well in order to articulate how to do it? Or he's just not capable? He falls down too easy?
I would say he himself is of two minds, often conflicting.
Does he sometimes not think about how old he is as a fly?
He doesn't. He doesn't even... I from what I can tell, he usually doesn't think about that.
Okay, so what are we talking about? This has gone on...
Well, you started it, okay? So, I think we talked about... In the Niles household, we have some traditions. We're big on traditions.
Yes.
And we talked about one of them not that long ago, how we have our annual flooding of the house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Once a year, we flood the house.
Typically January.
Just clean it out. It's good for the home.
A Noah's Ark type of situation.
Right. When is the last time you cleaned behind the walls? Probably never. That's gross.
You got me.
Okay. You're gross.
You got me.
You're a gross person.
You got the tater.
Your house is gross. I'm disgusted. You don't even do that. Okay. We do it once a year. That's one of the things. Another thing we do is sometimes we like to let our animals get out. Just to see what happens. Literally every time.
Every time you've bought cows thus far.
Twice. So it's 50% my fault, 50% other people's faults.
Mm-hmm.
Because half the time it was me and half the time it was other people. So yeah, we went to the cattle auction on Monday. We both got some fine heifers.
Yeah.
Fine looking ladies. And that's true. I think really we both got pretty good looking specimens.
Mm-hmm.
I have a gate that communicates with my neighbor's property. Say that to make it sound a little bit more sophisticated, the way I phrased the situation of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it seem like it's not that bad. And even though gates might be shut, there is ontologically whatever kind of word you want to put before the next part, there's a difference between a gate being shut and a gate being latched.
Mm.
So important.
Yes. So your cows got out.
They got out. The police had some fun with them. I want to give a shout out to the brave souls of the Broken Arrow Police Department. And then there was some community involvement. It's really, you know what? It really, I think, brought the community together.
some would say.
Which is one of the reasons why we love this tradition so much.
Is you're just helping the community band together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the cows got out and the police saw it and called some neighbors of yours who are farmers, ranchers.
Yeah.
And they were like, your cows got out. So they came running over, you know, trying to find them. And as in that process, the policemen were chasing these cows, which caused the cows to run.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I don't blame the policemen. They don't know.
But they ran them onto the main highway.
Yeah, they did.
They
did chase them onto the turnpike. Allegedly.
And then got so frustrated.
They did hit one of them. Anyway,
they were wanting to kill one.
That was the story that was told to us. They did want to do that. But, it didn't go that way. The story has a happy ending. And we live to fight another day.
Would some say that it's expensive to keep your borders closed?
No, it's expensive not to keep them closed.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's really expensive.
The life of a rancher, and I say this as if I have, years and years and years of ranching, but with my three cows, okay.
Three sets of cows that you've had?
I mean, this is my fourth year to do it, but, it's like the most I've ever had at once was five.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's hundreds, But anyway, it is still true that you're, as a rancher, you're not actually raising cattle. You're a grass farmer who mends fences.
Mm-hmm.
That is what you actually do. The cows just eat the grass.
Mm-hmm.
You just watch them eat the grass. Occasionally you give them something else if you want. But you're really a grass farmer who repairs barbed wire fences.
Or keeps gates shut and latched.
Gate culture is totally a thing.
Yeah.
About...
You don't hang on gates. You don't climb on gates.
Right. And then it's all about also teaching your kids to remember to shut gates.
Because, mm-hmm.
Your one toddler's absent-mindedness from cows getting out again.
I know. We chain ours.
Yeah. I have our security system has... It's got a thing on it, so I know if it's open or closed. But not the one that was left open. That one's way out there that just stays shut all the time. And latched now. It also has a chain on it now. So anyway.
Good idea.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're back. I'm glad they're healthy.
Yeah.
And one of them didn't die.
Yeah. Those are all good things. I'm also glad of all of those.
Tonight we're sipping on a little bit of Dancing Panda. It's a straight bourbon whiskey aged 8 years, 100 proof, so 50% ABV, out of Kentucky. I'm not sure where Crestwood, Kentucky is, but that's where it's out of. So we're on the Lord's team.
Cheers. The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers. I've already imbibed, and it is a deliciously smooth bourbon.
Hmm. The aftertaste is unexpected.
Mm-hmm. But it's just very nice.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's really wonderful. It really did catch me by surprise, though. It's not quite iodine. Hints, it's got a little bit of pepper to it, but that's not the word I'm looking for either, but...
It has apple cinnamon spice is what you're thinking of.
Yes, yes. It's the cinnamon. That's right. It's because it's got that bite.
Yeah.
Like almost acoustic in your mouth. Caustic, not acoustic.
Caustic. Yeah.
It's really That's good. Very good. I like that.
I'd never heard of it before. Dancing Panda. Never heard of this one before. I was just telling you before we started, it amazes me how you and I have been doing this for 10 years now, and every week we've basically tried a whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, that's, if there's 52 weeks in a year, I mean, that's 500 whiskeys.
Yeah.
That we've tried.
Who's the brass figurine on top reminds me of
Blanton's.
Yes. It definitely has the bottle. Well, the bottle doesn't really look like Blanton's, but it's got a figurine on top that is very reminiscent
of Blanton's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Quick update on Mary is that she has not been doing well. Actually, We're really working on trying to keep her lungs inflated. They keep deflating.
We're having, from being saturated with too much
fluids
and stuff.
Secretions, yeah. So we're not really sure, honestly, what's going to happen quite yet, like what our next plans are. It changes almost hour by hour, so yeah. It's really hard. That's why also why I just don't like to give updates like on social media and stuff, because the moment that I tell, I'm like, she's doing great, it's like the next 30 minutes
can change, right?
Can change. So I just, again, just ask for your prayers as we navigate through that.
Yeah, because she was doing, she was trending in good directions. And it seems like now that it's a different direction.
Yeah, we're just not, she's tough. She's a little fighter, though.
Yeah. So,
we're doing everything we can. And so, anyway, just keep her in her, yes, in her prayers.
Yes, indeed. Well, we're going to be talking today about one of the great saints in church history, Saint Bonaventure.
Would you say he's one that's overlooked often?
Absolutely.
For his contributions that he actually made?
Yeah. In fact, when we get on the other side of the break, I just want to talk a little bit about who he was. And where he fits in into church history, because he absolutely had an impact on your life. So we'll talk about it. We'll be right back.
Sweet.
A couple years ago, when Adam and I decided we wanted to lead our first pilgrimage, we asked around to find out who should we work with to help do this. And the thing we heard over and over again was Select International Tours. That's who you got to use. They're the best. Well, having used Select now, I can attest that they're incredible. No matter where it is you want to go in the world, Select has a tour ready for you. So whether you're interested in leading a pilgrimage or attending one, do yourself a favor and go to selectinternationaltours.com and take a look at everything they have to offer. You won't regret it. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're going to be talking about holiness today, according to Saint Bonaventure,
which is a open border policy.
This is absolutely open border policy. Holiness is for everyone.
Right.
Come on in. The water's fine. It hurts a little bit. But man, it's good. It does sting, though.
Because of your own sins.
Yes. Vices. It's because of me. I make it hurt. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. I make it hurt. And sometimes I blame you.
Yes, you do. Yes.
Which is, fair a little bit. But St. Bonaventure was a really cool guy. I think a lot of people don't know really much about him. He was, maybe you could say best friends with St. Thomas Aquinas. And very influential, in all likelihood, into the writings of Thomas Aquinas. Because St. Bonaventure himself was a deeply philosophical thinker, who got kind of, he was writing these just magnificent things, got sidelined when in the defense of the mendicant orders. So there was a particular...
What does he mean by that?
The mendicant orders are...
the mendicants, is that what you're saying?
Yes, mendicant orders.
Okay.
Like the Benedictines. I don't press me on what defines the mendicant order, but it's a group of orders.
Okay.
We'll look it up on the break. We'll find out. And so there was this writer who's, had a platform who was saying that they're not good for the church, that they're a distraction from holiness, he was obviously wrong about all these things. And so St. Bonaventure started dedicating a lot of his writing and a lot of his time he wrote all these things, a defense of the mendicant orders, an apology for all sorts of things that were around the religious life that he and St. Thomas Aquinas were living. So that took up many years for him. And then eventually he did go back to writing more things like we're going to be talking about today, which is on holiness itself. But really cool guy. And as you mentioned, I think underappreciated for his role and contribution to the church.
Yeah, so one of the things that is known is like when there was a council or some or there was church leaders that asked for every a handful of theologians to write part of the Mass when they were reforming the Mass, and Bonaventure was one, and St. Thomas Aquinas was one as well. And when they all got together, the St. Bonaventure said, "You know, St. Thomas, why don't you go first?" And St. Thomas read what he had written for within the Mass, and then Father Bonaventure, St. Bonaventure said, "This is that was absolutely perfect. There's no need for me to relay what I had written. We shall go with his."
Nice.
Which is like pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's a sign of good humility and love of truth, love of wisdom.
Yeah, and he's a Franciscan. Did you mention that? I don't know if he mentioned that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so he entered when he was young, and he became like the minister general of the order, which is basically like the head of the order of the Franciscans, and known a lot for his writings on the angels, right? Like he wrote a ton on, like he was known as the before Aquinas was known as the angelic doctor. He was like the seraph doctor or something like that. Isn't that right? Like seraphic doctor?
Yeah, seraphic.
Seraphic, thank you. And had a really close relationship and spirituality as St. Francis of Assisi, which I think we should do an episode at some point on who is the real St. Francis of Assisi, because I just don't think he gets the right, like, I think he's up there going like, you guys are painting a picture of me that just is not true.
It was so cool to
out
get
of justice. I think we owe it to him.
Oh yeah. That he's just like some animal lover sort of thing. I mean, I think he did like animals probably because they're part of God's creation, but he was animals. That wasn't what he was about, which it does. He gets that reputation as if
right.
That's his thing.
Right.
Is, you know, oh, the animals and
but
stuff.
But if you're new to St. Bonaventure, I would think of him as he's kind of like the Franciscan answer to Aquinas. He's like he's less systematic in his writings than St. Thomas Aquinas. You know, St. Thomas Aquinas is very systematic, very engineer-like in his Summa, where, you know, problem, answer, you know. But he's less systematic, but much like his writings are much more contemplative.
Sure.
I'm not putting down Aquinas saying his isn't contemplative, but his writings read more contemplative, but they're just as deep as the systematic teachings of St. Thomas Aquinas. So, you know, the contemplative life is greater than the active life, and St. Bonaventure really received that well, lived that well, and the fruits of that were in his writings.
Sure. And they were also incredibly practical. Down to earth. Mm-hmm. Here's what to think about. The book we're principally going to be discussing today is Holiness of Life by St. Bonaventure. This one is from Koryesu Press, which you and I have really just fallen in love with. Everything from them. But just, you know, like you said, he was so important to the Franciscans. He's actually referred to as the second founder of the Franciscan order. So that's a big deal, you know. So anyway, I don't want to take up too much time talking about
history. Yeah, but he does a really good job in his writings of uniting the mind or the intellectual life with prayer. Like reason integrated into the spiritual life, so to speak. If Aquinas was the builder of the cathedral of reason, Bonaventure was like walks you into the sanctuary.
Right. Yeah, I like that. Did you come up with that?
No.
Nice. Okay, so in this book, Holiness of Life, He's writing to a Poor Clare nun. It might be in here. I don't remember who it is. He just usually refers to her as, you know, my sweet daughter, or, you know, he gives nice things. But he starts off with a great order. So he first talks about self-knowledge. You know, so if you want to attain holiness, then we need to start where we can, and that's with ourselves, right? So self-knowledge, then he moves on to humility, poverty, and then to silence.
Hmm.
And I think especially there, moving from poverty first into silence just makes a lot of sense. And so I really, really loved the way he talked about it. So let's...
Again, systematic, but spiritual.
Spiritual and practical, right? That, like, hey, this is just a very profound recognition of the condition of the human person. So he's basically saying that you can't progress if you're living a lie about yourself. Okay, you need to first just be honest. You know, what do they say? Recognize that I have a problem. Okay, so a man, he says, must enter into himself to see both his dignity in the as that he has as having the image of God and his misery as a sinner.
So let me ask you a question on that.
Sure.
Because when I hear, like, a man must enter into himself to see both his dignity as an image of God and as his misery, like, entering into himself, that sounds nice and I want to like it. I don't really know what that means.
Yeah. Okay. So what I think he means by that is it's a profound examination of conscience. Giving yourself no slack. Just really deciding to be brutally honest with yourself about your sins, right? Because I think so often we, you know, it's like, oh, you know, sure. It's just, you know, that's just a white lie, or it's just a, you know, it's a little thing, or yeah, I have this, what do people call it? Like an indulgence that they, oh gosh, I can't think of the term, but you know, oh, this is my little thing that I have. It's like, oh, I really enjoy doing this, and it's guilty pleasure.
That was brutal.
Well, yeah,
but that's to extract.
That's it. But I got there.
Yeah,
okay.
You did.
So like, oh, I have this little guilty pleasure, which I hate it when people say that. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't do that. Don't have a guilty pleasure.
Right. Unless the pleasure isn't actually,
unless it's not
deemed worthy of guilt.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you're just using that as a term. But a lot of times people do mean, oh, they have something that they like to do that they know they ought not to.
Right.
Even if it's like, I watch stupid television shows. I
mean, yours is watching The Bachelor.
You know, mine, The Bachelor. Yeah, that's right. I prefer The Bachelor over The Bachelorette. No, I don't. But that's what I think he means when he says enter into yourself. It's about having a real examination of conscience and getting an accurate assessment of where you are.
I think that's difficult, though, because sin blinds you. So it's actually hard to do this. It's not like something that's, oh, let me just sit here and think about all of my weaknesses. A lot of times men don't even know their weaknesses until they learn more, and then they reflect and realize, like, oh, I was doing something that was sinful. I didn't even realize that was actually sinful. Or, oh, I didn't realize I had a bad temper.
So he's got a list of things to do here to start off. We'll talk about it. Be right back.
If you haven't supported us on Patreon and got a Catholic Man Show Glencairn glass, very soon we will be shutting down the thank you gifts for the Glencairn glasses for Patreon for a little while to give Jimothy, Jimbo Baggins, Mr. Jim Spencer a little bit of a break, because I think when he signed up for doing this, he didn't realize he was going to be signing up for years.
Yeah, he didn't think we'd still be going.
Right. And he needs a break. So I think what we're going to do is we still have a lot of glasses, but we're only going to keep it open for a little bit longer on Patreon. So if you haven't supported us, you want a Catholic Mantra Glen Cairn glass, $10.
Hop on.
More or a month or more, and you will for sure receive a Glen Cairn glass within the next month or two.
Awesome. So you were saying about how hard it might be before the break to
enter into yourself.
Okay, so here's what he says. He says that the root causes of sin come from that. He has a threefold way. He says that it's from negligence, passion, and malice. So this is, and he further breaks that down. He says, first, discover by reflection whether you are occasionally or habitually negligent. Recollect the control of your heart. Is it slipshod or haphazard? Are you careless in the use of your time? Is the intention you propose to yourself habitually imperfect? Examine diligently on these three heads, because it is of the utmost importance that you govern your affections, that you spend your time profitably, and always and in every action have a good and becoming object or end in view. These tasks and the cultivation of these practices demand your best energies. So I think that's a great place to start. And I like where he starts. Are you habitually or occasionally negligent? Because that's something that it's like, yeah, sometimes. I just don't think it's that big of a deal. Okay, well, are you really serious about achieving holiness? Because it will cost you everything.
Right.
You first need to know that if you decide to pursue holiness, this is not something that you know, you can get at a discount.
Right. I mean, you see this all the time in the natural world, right? Like people who are, you know, NFL players who are trying to obtain the Super Bowl, they don't take off. They don't, you know, cheat on meals. They don't skip workout days. They don't, like, they're incredibly diligent with everything they do, from eating to working out to how they stretch to the exercises that they do to how they watch film. I mean, everything they do, they surround themselves with that because they want to be the best. Same with business, right? Like,
right.
You just, like, the guys who are the most successful in the business world, it's because, like, they pour every single thing. They don't cut corners, because you can't. Success doesn't come from cutting corners, and neither does sainthood, right? Like, you just don't cut corners to sainthood. There's no fast track to sainthood, except for martyrdom. Maybe you can make the case
yeah,
for martyrdom.
Actually, there is a fast track.
As I was saying, I was like, well, actually, martyrdom would probably be one. But to have the grace and to participate in that grace in that moment at the very time,
yeah,
is a supernatural grace, especially if you're not living the virtuous life. But living the virtuous life, there's no cutting corners.
Right. So you need to decide. Yes.
And there's no neutral.
I am committing to that this will be hard. It'll take everything that you have. He says, if you should wish to pursue the subject and know yourself still better, take another look at yourself and ask whether your interior promptings tend toward pleasure, curiosity, or vanity.
Yes, yes.
So these, yes, yeah. Is there all of the above? Yeah. Is that on there? Yeah. So I do think that you're very right. It is hard to sometimes, because even if you're earnest about assessing your situation, sometimes it's like, well, you're trying and you just are blind to these things. But I think asking yourself some of these questions and looking at, yes, my interior, like when my desire, the things that I, you know, tend to want, or I find myself drawn to, are those things that tend to be oriented towards pleasure, curiosity, vanity? You know, do I often find myself negligent, right?
And a lot of times the actions that you do don't start with any of those three, right? A lot of times they are pure actions or thoughts, and then they get engulfed in these vanities or glory. Like you just feel good because you're doing the Lord's work, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, what about me? You know, I mean, you see, this is what happens with, you know, celebrity priests or, you know, pastors or mm-hmm. you know, like even lay Catholic apologists and things like that, where their motives at the very beginning were genuine and true, and they did desire that. And then it's very easy to slip off that road slowly, inch by inch, and then realize 3 years later how far you've actually moved away from that road and your original intentions and motives.
Right, yeah.
And how you don't want to give that up anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny, he ends this chapter saying, God, grant that I may know nothing if I do not know my own self. Which is interesting that he'd say, because you'd think, oh, if I do not, God grant that I know nothing if I don't know you. Mm-hmm. But he knows that you have to first know yourself.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this has to do with, and I actually wrote about this on my Substack this week, is the case for wonder. And we've talked about this kind of on the show before. Like, you have to give yourself time to wonder, to be bored, to give yourself time to reflect.
Like for me this week, when I was wondering where my cows are.
Yeah, that was not the example that I would have given, but you do. You have to give yourself time to reflect. It has to be intentional. Mm-hmm. To give yourself space to meditate, to actually, because it's not like, okay, I'm going to think about, like, I'm going to quote unquote enter into myself. Ready? Go. Okay, that was good. I did that, and now I'm moving on. Like, you know, that's just not how it works, right?
Right.
You know, that's what also meditative prayer is about.
Yes. Yeah, it's not, you're right. This is not something that you can just sit down and do. It's a process of daily reflection that you need to take earnest effort into.
And
don't expect that, yes, all right, I'm going to spend the next hour getting to know myself. I'm going to check this box off.
Right.
It's actually an ongoing, lifelong endeavor to know and master yourself.
And it's an accompaniment with our Lord, right? It's actually a conversation.
Absolutely.
It's not actually, to enter into oneself, it's not a singular moment. It's not a singular act. It's a entering actually into a relationship with our Lord so that you can see your flaws, because the goal here is to be more like Jesus.
Right.
Like, Lord, I want to be like you, mm-hmm. which is why we go to Holy Mass, which is why, like, because we just want to be more and more like our Lord. And the only way to do that it's not a isolated incident. It's not something that I'm just going to go do myself. I think that would actually be the difference in a lot of, it's like Stoic meditations versus Christian meditations, right? Stoic meditations is like trying to enter into myself, or like enter outside of this world and like ponder things. And in the Christian meditation, Christian prayer is entering into a relationship with the Creator.
Right. Absolutely. And so as you ponder and get to know yourself better, it really, his next topic is humility. And it's really hard to find where the line is between self-knowledge and humility, because those two things become the same. True humility, he says, humility, actually this is Saint Bernard, is a virtue which prompts a man possessing an exact knowledge of himself to estimate himself and his powers as dross. So dross means like, bah.
Really?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Thank you, Webster.
If you Google it, meh.
I like what you had in the notes here, that Bonaventure's thesis is humility is the guardian and foundation of all virtues.
Yes. Yeah, so he says, to excel in virtue and yet not to practice humility is simply to carry dust before the wind.
Yeah.
To excel in virtue. You might have a lot of virtues, but not practice humility is to carry dust before the wind. As pride is the beginning of all sin, so humility is the foundation of all virtue. Which is just absolutely true. God, there's this novena that my wife and I pray to Saint Joseph, and when it's talked on the one day, we're talking about Joseph's humility. The novena says that God uses only the humble to do His work. Those who do not care, those who do not seek to keep any of the glory for themselves. So it's those are the ones God chooses to use as His instruments. because only they can actually be instruments. Without humility, you're trying to be, you know, it's like, I did this, I'm doing it my way, you know.
Right. And you see that. You see that in Mother, you know, St. Mother Teresa. You see that in even Fulton Sheen when he wins the Emmy and they and he opens it up with, I'd like to thank my writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Yeah. You know, like you see that the people that God uses, they could care less about their notoriety, you know, and their fame. And that's hard. Dude, that is tough because everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants to be known. Everybody wants to be seen. That is, and it's an intoxication that happens, right? Like, yeah. It feels good to walk down and somebody recognize you or like to hold you of high esteem. But that's,
sure.
That's fleeting. But that sense that you get there is really only that God can fill because you desire an eternal love that no creature can give.
And if you train yourself in those moments to remind yourself that it is God's approval alone that you seek, mm-hmm. you can learn to start to devalue those accolades mm-hmm. from the world. If thou wilt be perfect, go sell what thou hast and give to the poor.
I would like you to go sell what you have and give to me, the poor. Very well, I accept.
So
I will be the instrument into your perfection.
Thank you. And I yours.
No, that's okay.
I'll give it to you if you give it right back.
Okay. You go first.
So Bonaventure moves from self-knowledge, humility, and then he moves into poverty.
Speaking of which?
Yeah. What he calls perfect poverty, which is like, whoa, how do you know?
Perfectly poor.
It's like, you could be poorer still. Let me help you.
So what does he mean by that?
He means poverty for the right reason. And not simply being poor, not simply I don't like the word poor because it's literally not being poor. It's
detachment.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's about detachment. That's the key word.
Holy detachment.
Yes. It's the unburdening that the soul of the soul so that we can run towards Christ, right? That we're not being weighed down because attachment to things of this earth is foolishness. We're trying to get to the next place, right? We don't want to anchor ourselves in this world. And that's what attachment to possessions, that's what it is, right? I mean, just think about what if you lost fill in the blank? Like, what if you got the call to quit your job to become a missionary? Mm-hmm. Like, God spoke to you, hypothetical, you knew, like, yep, God wants me to do this. Would you panic?
Yes.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah, there would be, you'd have to really confront that. So training ourselves to, even just in prayer, just to, when if they have that thought, just say, yes, Lord, and give it away. If that's what you want, you know, and probably that's not what he's calling you to do. Whatever the thought is that comes to your mind. But still, it's a good practice to confront as if that's what it was and just detach yourself from those things. It can be very, very helpful.
I like what Aquinas says about, he says, a man is truly wealthy when he lacks nothing that he truly needs for salvation.
Don't you love that?
I mean, that's yes, fire. That's fire.
Say that again.
A man is truly wealthy when he lacks nothing that he truly needs for salvation.
Yes, he has what he has. Everything he needs for salvation.
That's a wealthy man.
That's wealth. That's real wealth.
All right.
That the things that will never fade, the glory that is perpetually yours, because it's his, and he has given everything to you.
Well, because
if you would accept it.
Yeah, because ultimately, like the more that you attach yourself to worldly things, the less you can attach yourself to heavenly things, right? Because you only have yourself, and there's only so many, so
you
much
cannot
of yourself.
Serve you both have, God and mammon.
Right? You only have so much bandwidth.
Yeah.
And so, like, the more you sink your teeth into worldly things, the less that you can sink, you know, your soul into heavenly realities.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's. I think it's. He's writing here toward once again to a nun, and the relationship that religious vocations have with poverty is more literal. It's more straightforward. It is part of the challenge of family life. For instance, there are things like chastity, poverty that we have to wade into. And constantly discern and be a part of like this messiness of ourselves and of other people, right? There isn't just a clear-cut line. You stay on this side of the line, right? You know, like for a priest who is celibate, like chastity is, it's you know exactly what it is and what it isn't, right? But even for the married man, you know, you still have to guard your heart against the desires that you may have as a man, even for your own wife, potentially, right? That you need to remind yourself to view her in the light of who God made her to be. And that's great. But poverty is another one of these things where, you know, at the same time, we're called to be successful in what we do, right? God does not want you to go and be poor at your job. That he wants you to be virtuous. And the virtuous life means that I will be diligent. I will try to be excellent.
Magnanimous.
Right. At all things which God sets my hand to. And that may end up with putting money in the bank account, right? And so it really is a challenge. I don't want to diminish that. But we have to constantly, this is why having a prayer life, like you're not going to make it to heaven without a prayer life.
Yeah.
We have to be constantly orienting ourselves every morning towards who we are, who we're about, what kind of man do I have decided this is the man I want to be. Every morning I re-decide that. I commit myself again at lunch, right? Or whatever, as often as it takes, I will commit and just have to have that habit of constant, yes, yes, recommit, of constant conversion, really.
Yeah.
That you can stay on that path that you've decided to be on, because everything is so distracting.
Again, there's no neutral in the spiritual life.
That's right. That's exactly right. So, he moves on from there. I want to make sure we talk about silence. And it's so beautiful. Yes. And there you have it. There it is. But poverty, when you read the way he's right about this, you just see how poverty and silence, how they really are twins in many, many ways.
Okay, what do you mean?
That the stuff we attach ourselves to, they're loud. Our own appetites scream inside of our souls. They yell at us. They drive us more, right? And you cannot have silence when you have fed these appetites, when you fed your desires, when you belong to something else that is constantly loud, right? And so that process of detachment from all these things is what gives you an interior silence, right? That you can turn the music off in the house, turn the lights down even. But if your heart, if your appetites are like hungry barking dogs, then you won't actually be able to have interior silence. You won't actually be able to, and it kind of, this is kind of where it comes back to being full circle, as you try to examine yourself. Because we said that process of self-knowledge is an ongoing, this is all a cycle. We have to have interior silence so that we can actually see who we are, right? Because those appetites, they are not only loud, but they're liars. They also lie to us about who we are. Tell us that we're someone we aren't, that we're made for things that are not the authentic, that's not the way God wanted us to be, right? Maybe the world we live in, but that's not how, in the beginning, it was not so, right? And so we have to have that poverty so that we can have this interior silence. We have to detach ourselves so that we can come to know ourselves, so that we can have real humility, so that we can then see what are the things that we ought to attach ourselves to, right? I know who I am. I know what I'm for. I'm for these things over here. I'm not for these things over here. More detachment, more interior silence, deeper knowledge of ourselves.
Step aside, son. I know what I'm about.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, so I really, really highly recommend this book. It was a very short read, easy to pick up. You could read it. You could probably read this book in an hour and a half. And it's just full of let me read this to you.
Okay.
Silence has another advantage. It shows that man belongs to a better world. If a man lives in Germany and yet does not speak German, we naturally conclude that he is not German. So too, we rightly conclude that a man who does not give himself up to worldly conversation is not of the world, although he lives therein. How about that?
That's profound.
Silence shows that a man belongs to a better world.
Yeah, that's profound.
I love that. When I read that, I spent some time thinking about that and how many times, as someone who is truly hilarious, and I can say that because I know myself so well, right? And I have perfect humility. How many times I say, you know, just dumb jokes, and how much better off I would be. How much more serious people would probably, the better opportunity I have for evangelization if I didn't speak, but when I did, it meant something. You know, then I would have the opportunity all the time to say something meaningful. If you reserve your speech, even though you might have something truly hilarious to say, everyone would love this. You know what they love better? The gospel.
They do. Your quotes from Mighty Python and Holy Grail, though.
They slay. I know.
I know. Holiness of Life by St. Bonaventure, Corey Jesus Press. Great little read. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
Raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus. What else, dude?
Dude, I don't have a whole lot else.
The book continues. We didn't have time. I knew we wouldn't have time to go into it. So after Silence, he talks about the practice of prayer, the remembrance of Christ's passion, the perfect love of God, and then final perseverance, which are also really great things. But I knew there wouldn't be enough time.
I think out of all the graces, the grace of final perseverance is the one I want the most.
I definitely want that one. I don't pretend to know the hierarchy. I know I want sanctifying grace the most.
Well, you have that.
But if we're picking like which grace we want the most, that's the one it is for me.
Yeah, me too.
And you can pick something different.
No, I want sanctifying grace.
Yeah. Can we have just one? Because I personally...
No.
I'd like to sign up.
The Lord is a lover. He's a giver.
True dat.
So.
True dat. I know we've talked about Corey Jesus Press a lot, but... I sent him an email the other day. Like I said, your website's amazing. Your books are amazing. Everything you have is amazing. The only thing that's not amazing is you don't have a button that allows me to buy all of it. I want it all.
The whole library.
Literally everything here in the cart.
Yeah.
Check out.
Did they respond?
He did. He's like, yeah, maybe we'll have to add that.
You idiot. Block.
But anyway, St. Bonaventure is a cool guy. I also really enjoyed reading some of the history that is the introduction to this book. Just kind of talks about who he is. And like I too was one of those people who did not appreciate him for his contributions. Mm-hmm. So that's all I got.
Be holy.